All right, everybody, welcome back. Episode number 7 of the Metsed Up podcast here. I mean, look at us. We're 7 episodes in. We're 11, 12 games into the season, I think, roughly. And Mets baseball is starting to look better.
Yeah, I don't know.
A lot to talk about nothing, because that's kind of just what happened this series, is there wasn't a lot. Now, before, of course, we get going into it, you know what we got to do. We got to tell you where you can find us, where you can listen to us. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts. You can watch us on YouTube. You just searched up Metsed Up Podcast. I mean, you're listening to it now, but hey, maybe you want to try it out somewhere else. There you go. And then you can also follow us on all our social media, Metsed Up on Twitter and Instagram. James are on the Instagram, posting every single day. We got tweets going out. Weirdly enough for me, I've been taking a little bit of a social media hiatus. I'm going on 48 hours of not using Twitter or Instagram. I've been watching YouTube videos, but I haven't even been checking like any sort of YouTube numbers outside of the podcast.
That's a sick brag, dude. Look at you, whole weekend off social media.
I know, right? Like, how many times have I ever done that in my life since...
Have you found your inner peace? Are you aligned?
You know, roommate Alex asked, did you feel like you were seeing things that you were missing? And I was like, not really. I mean, like, I'm not that super into my phone, but it definitely was nice to just like be able to not worry about like, I need to tweet this or I need to look at this video or check these numbers. It's definitely relaxing. And I think it was a much needed break, but I will say watching these Mets games yesterday, all I wanted to do was tweet. And I had to say, I had to stay so disciplined because there were a lot of tweetable things in yesterday's game.
Is this the Metsed Up podcast or is this the Marked Up podcast?
Oh, I got to sprinkle a little bit of my own in there too. You can tell me about your personal triumphs that you've been doing this past weekend. What'd you do this weekend? The people want to know.
Basically nothing. I wrote a big article that's going to come out in Pitcher List on Monday. And then I sat down, I watched a ton of sports. So much unbelievable amount of baseball these last 2 days. It's been a pleasure, honestly.
Yeah, and luckily for us, the Mets got 2 wins, which is really nice because that makes watching baseball even more enjoyable is when, if they're not playing great, at least they're winning, and that's kind of what happened this year.
Yeah, absolutely. I kind of want to start with game 3 because, you know, it's fresh in our minds. It was the most, I won't say it was the most exciting thing because game 1 was pretty exciting, but let's jump in to game 3 because that was like, gave me palpitations. I was sweating. Literally 2 hours and 30 minutes of nothing devolved into 5 minutes of what felt like chaos. Even though it wasn't that much chaos, but it just felt, just having a one-run lead in Coors Field is like basically being tied anywhere else kind of feels like.
And all the Mets were doing this weekend, it felt like, was keeping in one-run games that we were winning. The game that we lost, it wasn't a one-run game by any means.
Yeah, leave it to the Mets to walk into Coors Field and get in 2 pitchers' duels. It's classic.
We talked about this. Were you able to find, I guess, like the last time that the Mets hit only one home run in a quarter series or 8 runs in 3 games? I can't imagine that's happened many times in the history of the
no,
Mets.
No, definitely not Coors. Especially, it felt like every time the Mets have gone to Coors, they've put up crazy offensive numbers. Given that's also usually comes later in the season when it's not 35 degrees. But still, I don't know.
I always think of, you know, and everyone thinks of Coors, like you're going to put up the numbers and to throw 8 up on the board against Chichi Gonzalez, Herman Marquez, who looked really good, let's be honest. And then who pitched today?
Senzatella.
Senzatella. I mean, like 2 absolute, I don't want to say scrubs because that's just a little harsh. But
historically, Chichi and Senzatella are both glorified batting practice pitchers. Those guys,
especially in Coors.
Yeah, since Senzatella's in innings either, like he gets out there and he throws, like he gives the Rockies something, and he has a decent slider. Kind of pretty good, but
it's okay.
Yeah, I'm gonna find his career ERA right now because I don't think
He was throwing like he was sitting 98, 97 today, which is like pretty good. That's good stuff. He just doesn't have the other pitches to go along with it.
In 437 career innings, Antonio Senzatella's ERA is 5.07.
That's exactly where I would have pegged him, right at 5.
Yeah, and you got to hit better than this. You got to be a little disappointed with the Mets bats again this series. Even though we thought we came out of it, we thought we had gotten into a rhythm and a groove, but clearly that was just not the case.
Yeah, we thought that this, especially like how we ended the series coming into Coors, where it's you always have the highest batting averages and the highest OPS, and there's just so much field out in the outfield. The Mets made Coors Field look, small's not the right word, but they made it look huge, as if it was, it's a big field to begin with.
Yeah, Coors Field is huge. People kind of assume that Coors Field is small because of the run environment, but Coors Field actually, if you take every single outfield in Major League Baseball, it has the most square footage. That's kind of where the high batting averages on balls in play and like the crazy offensive outputs come in Coors Field. Home runs are aplenty, sure, but mostly it's finding those gaps and getting those balls in the corner. There were a good amount of balls hit into that right field corner this weekend, but not enough.
Not enough. I mean, I mean, technically enough, we got two wins. Yeah, we still got two wins. Technically so enough, technically, we did win the series when there were times where it looked like this could have been a series that we got swept in, which is crazy to say with DeGrom and Stroman on the mound, but that's just how inept the offense was this weekend. It wasn't showing up. So let's go back to game three here because that's the one that was fresh on our minds. We had Stroman on the mound, and yet again, Marcus Stroman fucking pitched his nuts off. He is just...
No more nuts.
He's so good.
So good. Stroman looked amazing today. He employed a real core strategy. He kept the ball down, heavy mix of his sinkers and cutters, got way more ground balls and called strikes than whiffs. Stroman actually is kind of weird right now, but he has the same amount of strikeouts as hits allowed this season, which is generally not a recipe for success, but it's working. Right now, the only people who put a ball in play over 100 miles an hour were Trevor Story and Charlie Blackmon, which is going to happen. You can't keep those guys off the board. As awful as the rest of this lineup has gotten in the last few years, those two are still stalwarts, professional hitters. Trevor Story, future Yankee, but I digress. But again, keeping the ball down, not so many fly balls. I feel like, again, staying away from his slider. Maybe he's just not feeling it early in the season. Maybe that's just because he knew he wouldn't be able to grip it as well in cores. And he used the splitter a little bit more today than last start. He pulled it out when he needed it. It had the most whiffs on any of his pitches, but despite being the third most thrown at only 14%, which in 13 pitches thrown, 14% of his total pitches, there were 6 swings and 3 whiffs.
Especially because, like, now it's just another thing. Like, when you're looking at Stroman, you're preparing for Stroman, you have to consider now even more that this is a pitch that he can legitimately use and use as an out pitch, which...
Definitely. It's almost like he's becoming a guy who is two different pitchers in one guy. He can come out and rock four-seam slider, splitter, get whiffs, be like an up-and-down pitcher, or he can do what he did today and what he did last time out, where he just pounds the bottom of the zone, pounds, sinker, cutter, just eats those inside and outside corners, just crushes them, and then just gets out, especially with the new Mets, new and improved defense.
Yeah, and I think Ron Darling even mentioned that during the broadcast in the game, and he talked about, like, we have seen different Marcus Stromans, and both of them have been really, really good. So depending on who he's playing and what the day is and how he's feeling,
the
it's
weather.
Good to know that if one thing isn't working, it seems like he can kind of make that shift into the other version of Marcus Stroman, and he's going to end up being fine. Now, today, things were working. He didn't have to make any shift. It seemed like it was a conscious effort. He was going in there looking for ground balls nonstop.
He was working so quickly. The pace was amazing. This game in the eighth inning had only taken like 2 hours and 15 minutes. It was shockingly fast.
Besides how boring it was offensively, if you're like a true fan of baseball and just like quick pace, like old school baseball kind of stuff, like this was a really enjoyable game to watch because the pace was great. Balls were being put in play constantly. There weren't a lot of strikeouts in this game from the Rocky side, at least. And it's just like good defense, good plays. Stroman also only had, I think, like, what, 88 pitches through eight or something like that?
No, which is, it was I think he had less going into the eighth. He came out of the game with 92 or 94, something like that. Not many.
I think it was, what, like the seventh when he gave up the first run of the game
for him? Seventh inning, yeah.
And I think at the time they put up a graphic on the, you know, screen while he was pitching, and they said, like, he hadn't had an inning where he threw more than 12 pitches.
Crazy. He came out of the game with 90 pitches on the nose. I thought there was a chance he was going to come out for the ninth, honestly.
I thought so, too, based on how well he was pitching. But I actually do have to agree with the decision with Rojas.
Totally agree with the
decision. Especially because Blackmon and Story have both been hitting the ball the best out of anybody. We just got to give him a different look.
Those guys manufactured the only run of the game. And as I said before, they were the only Rockies to put a ball in play of at least 100 miles an hour. They were doing the damage.
They needed to see a different look, and clearly Edwin Diaz was, while Story still got like that dinky little reach over and get a hit because it's Coors Field. I mean, Diaz was still looking really, really sharp again.
Dude, electric. He has been throwing BBs this year. Fastball is life.
That was the Edwin Diaz, like this series especially, because he's come in one-run games in Coors where he has an issue of giving up home runs. That's his big thing, and has an issue with like just the hits fine in spots. He somehow was able to get through both of his appearances, lights out. He was disgusting. And that is the Edwin Diaz. Even when he, like the fly ball that McMahon hit in game three that Nimmo caught right at the fence, you saw him, he was like, okay, we're good. He caught it. We're fine.
That I couldn't believe that ball got out that far. He looked like he saw them off. Yeah, Ryan McMahon is good. I left this series respecting Ryan McMahon much more than I did going in. Besides that throwing error he made in game one yesterday, he was really putting the ball everywhere in the field.
Putting the ball everywhere, and he was making diving plays everywhere. And like you said, that throw was the only bad one. He almost made that sick double play today where Story caught it like backhanded in the hole, and then McMahon ran from second base to cut in front of him, and the throw was on target and pretty solid. It was just a tough play to make, but McMahon's, it looks like he's a little bit of a ball player out there and someone that could be someone to keep an eye on.
And that relay from Blackman to McMahon to Fuentes to nab McNeil, those balls in the corner are always triples and cores. 9 times out of 10. And McNeil's not a slow runner, and he had a good jump, and he was moving. That was just a bang, bang, perfect relay play. And to jump to game one for a second, the play that they made on the VR pinch hit to,
for Almora?
Yeah, Almora was safe by like a fingernail.
By literally, Almora made a perfect slide. Perfect slide. And they made a perfect relay throw and almost got him. Literally, if he tried to slide anywhere else on the plate, he's out.
Yeah, that slide was sick. But just to stick with game three before we move on to game one, James McCannon. Holy shit.
I fucking love him. I love him.
That was sick.
While he might not be doing much at the plate right now, and he had some pretty horrible at-bats today, especially like the 3-0 count where he rolled over one to shortstop.
Oh, yeah, he had another 2-0 count where he just like lunged at a ball and just like bloofed it to left field.
And I think, I got to look this up maybe, but it seems like he's really trying to do too much out of the 8-hole, which is a weird sentence to say, but I think because he knows the pitcher is coming up next, he's really trying to like make an impact and not have it like be a walk with the pitcher coming up next. So it seems like he's pressing a little bit, and that's what you see with like the 2-0 strike where he swung and kind of just lunged. The 3-0 swing was atrocious, but it doesn't matter because at the end of the game, McCannon.
Having a real catcher back there is...
That throw was disgusting. I want
to
like
sex that Savant. Throw was sex. No, I could, yeah, I looked on Baseball Savant to try and find any time that a Mets catcher ended a game with an assist that's in the search function. I couldn't find it. I think I was doing something wrong, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was true.
And I think the thing that's gonna get slept on about that throw too is like Diaz is horrendous at holding on.
Oh my god, he didn't even look.
No, didn't look once. And Ron and Gary, we're both talking about it like, oh, you're running story here. There's no doubt, especially against Diaz.
And he threw the pitch completely in rhythm. He gave absolutely no credence at all to the possibility that the really fast guy who steals between 20 and 30 bases a year on first base would possibly go with down by one in the ninth inning.
And he's also not quick to the plate either. He's all
no!
with all his movement. Like, he is the perfect guy to steal off of. And somehow McCann was able to, I mean, hosed him. That throw was an absolute BB. And Lindor also with a tag is fantastic.
Yeah, slapped it. And Lindor immediately knew that he got that tag down. There was no question about it. He was screaming. Also, throwing on 101-mile-an-hour fastball, not an issue.
That was a great throw. That was a great, you know, little exclamation point to the end of the game. We needed it because I was not feeling good.
No, I was feeling bad. You texted me. Not good.
Not good. I was like, don't feel great about today. Especially like, Diaz is due. You know he's going to blow one at some point.
Hey, like come on. Be nice to Edwin.
I feel like today was the day.
He's Edwin, not Ed Luz. Edwin is, I don't want to say he's locked in, but he looks kind of locked in. He's pitching with freaking confidence. And with a bunch of off days coming in the next 2 weeks, you're going to see a lot more of him.
Especially at least like as a Met, this is probably the best streak of pitching from Edwin Diaz that we've seen, where he's been this locked in.
Yeah, this and the end of last year too. The last 20 games of last year, he was unhittable.
Because I think right now, I don't have the exact number, and I probably should. I'll get it. I'll start looking for it. But I remember after game one, I think they were talking about he has 17 strikeouts out of the 20-something batters he faced or something this year. Is that correct?
You might be thinking of just the game one statistic that the Mets struck out 17 of 21 batters.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking
that
of.
That could okay. be it.
Yeah, because that would be unbelievable. But he is striking out an insane amount of batters still, which is awesome because swing and misses with him is his game, of course.
Yeah. Last thing I just want to bring up before we move on to game one is how big of a day Pete had. He loves hitting home runs in Coors Field, but it seems like he just loves hitting in Coors Field. He put 4 balls of play today over 100 miles an hour. 2 of those above 110. That was bang. Some liners coming out there. Yeah, smoked the baseball a few times. And he looks comfortable at first, too. Much more so in the last couple of seasons.
Yeah, he's looked... I think there's a huge defensive improvement thus far this season. He seems like he's also trying to do less, which is big, because one of the huge things with Pete that we know he loves to do is he tries to do too much sometimes. And especially in the field, he loved to get deep in the hole on the right side where the second baseman would just field it normally and have no problem. And he'd lay out, and it just seems like they've really got him a little under control. And like, Pete just... One step to your right and left. That's all we need. Like, catch the ball, hit home runs.
That was the Pete special his rookie year. Just diving and smothering a baseball right in front of the second baseman when the pitcher couldn't have gotten there fast enough to cover because he cut it off too close to the grass.
We do got to work on the tosses to the pitcher with him a little bit. He scares me.
Yeah, yeah. The one where Stroman jumped today. That was pretty funny. He's just excited. He's excited.
Yeah, and I mean, what he's there for is to hit. And he's numbers aren't great yet, but he's starting to at least like have better at bats and start hitting the ball a lot more
consistently. Few hits today is raising that average big time.
Yes. 100%. And like we've said, he's a 250 guy, like on his best days. Yeah, so
the two hits today brought his average to 250.
There we go. On his best days, he's 250.
There it is.
There we go.
We did it.
And then I wrote something about Pete, and I kind of lost it. Where is it? Because, oh, here we go. So it's technically it was under the first game notes, but I'm just going to include it now because we're talking about Pete.
Yeah.
So what's crazy is about him is his K rate is like astronomically high for him right now. But somehow he's hitting the ball probably better than we've like really seen a lot with him, especially because he just like hasn't hit the ball soft this year. I think on Fangraphs right now, he does not have a soft hit ground ball
really
at all this year. It's like 4.5%
oh my God, yeah.
Soft contact rate.
That's crazy.
And he's taken what he had in soft contact last year, which was about like, I think 14-15%, and it's all gone to hard now. The medium stuff has stayed the same, but when he's hitting the ball, he's just crushing it.
Fangraphs probably hasn't updated yet with today's 4 hard hit balls and 4 at-bats, so that's going to go up. Pete also doesn't have a pop-up this year. Pete was over 13% pop-ups in each of the last 2 seasons, so no pop-ups at all. Massive.
It's huge. The strikeouts are going to be a thing with him always, and it's, again, like his chase rate isn't really even that up either. He's just swinging and missing a little bit more.
No, it's not. The key, actually, that Pete has done this season, which is different from years past, he is not taking as many pitches. His zone swinging rate has gone up by 10%. And a lot of the per-pitch statistics will stabilize earlier in the season because of how many pitches guys see on a daily basis. So that is a trend that probably shows an actual material improvement that Pete has made. He's taken 4% less called strikes and swung at 10% more pitches in the zone. And that's how you get more base hits and raise your batting average floor, put more balls in play.
Which is all great signs to see and kind of leads into what Pete did in game one, which was huge for us, but he's not the star of the show in game one. The star of the show in game one is obviously Jacob DeGrom.
Electric factory. Every single time Jacob DeGrom touches the mound, I stop everything I'm doing, clear my schedule, clear my head, and just sit and observe, enjoy. We are in the midst of one of the greatest stretches of pitching in the history of baseball, and I have no issue saying that. Jacob DeGrom this season has basically struck out half of the batters he's faced. That's ignorant. 48.6% of batters he's faced have struck out. How could that even be possible?
That's like not even video game numbers, because even in a video game, they're just like, you're striking too many guys out. Let's put a ball in play or something. Here's a fly ball. 48.6% is nuts. It is silly. Is there any pitcher that's even come anywhere even close to that, like as a starter? No way.
Burns is sitting around 46-47% right now, and Bieber, after today, I think is in the mid-40s too. But everyone was sucking off Shane Bieber today for breaking Nolan Ryan's first 4 starts of the season strikeout record. DeGrom is almost definitely going to get that next time out. Like, he's right on his ass, like white on rice.
And not to mention, yesterday now? Well, when you guys were
yesterday.
Saturday, whatever.
Yeah.
9 straight Ks. I was at a friend's house. We were playing some like old baseball card game, MLB Showdown.
Showdown? Wow. Showdown. That's sick.
It was electric, by the way. But we were in the middle of our tournament, deep into it. It was the playoff run, and we stopped what we were doing. Jake DeGrom was pitching. We watched, and then that was it. We're like, okay, we're just going to finish this after the Mets game because Jake DeGrom's on the mound. He might be breaking history here because he had 9 straight Ks at the time. He literally is, like you said, you stop what you're doing, you turn on the TV, and you watch Jacob DeGrom because we are seeing one of the greatest stretches in pitching history right now over whatever these 3-4-year span is going to be that we're currently in. You've mentioned in a previous episode, Koufaxian, and I'm hearing and more people saying it. Saying the Koufax type.
This is Koufaxian stuff. And people never sniff that Seaver record. You go seasons without even hearing that mentioned. Even when they said that was the record, I didn't even know it was Tom Seaver. My dad was like, oh, how could you not know that? What kind of Mets fan are you? But like, I didn't know.
And what's funny is I think DeGrom also got 9 last year, too.
Oh, really?
This is a regular occurrence for him now. He's like, once a year I'll strike out 9 guys in a row. 3 innings, you just don't get to do anything.
It's crazy. The funniest thing about Seaver's when he strike out 10 guys in a row is that he struck out the first guy that started and ended. Do you mean like striking out the same guy like twice in a row like that as you struck everyone else out? Like, you guys aren't seeing shit.
No, not at all. That's just like, that's how good Jake DeGrom is. We're putting him in the same conversation of Tom Seaver, and it's like just not crazy because Tom Seaver is one of the best pitchers of all time in Major League Baseball history.
Definitely.
And DeGrom is doing stuff that compares to it, and let's be honest, is facing better competition. It's just not
even way close. Better competition. It's more technology. There's more knowledge. There's more information. There's a just better hitters. There's literally better equipment. The bats. I couldn't even imagine hitting with a bat from like 1972.
All I can think about is like batting gloves were created because guys were getting splinters from the bats that they were using because it was like just like that's a strong branch up there. Let's saw it off a little bit. Nice bat. Like DeGrom is so good.
He's so good. And just to, again, switch gears here, continue to talk about DeGrom, the irony is that we were all hyped up for that record, and that inning, the wheels kind of came off. Relatively to Jacob DeGrom, the wheels coming off is like a few unearned runs scoring. But I had never seen DeGrom show the type of like emotion that he showed that inning. He screamed when that the sack fly went and Conforto made the bad throw of the plate. DeGrom screamed into his glove and he snapped at the ball and he slunk his shoulders. Ronnie was a little bit disappointed in Jake.
Yeah, I am okay with it because let's be honest, as I think we said it last time too, the most impressive stat by Jacob DeGrom is that he has murdered zero of his teammates.
Yeah, shout out Meek Phil.
Yes, shout out Meek Phil. Great follow on Twitter. So if this is the first time he ever, showed up a teammate or anything like that, I mean, God bless him. Clap it up for him. He deserves the Nobel Peace Prize because anybody else, I think, in Major League Baseball would have fought a teammate at this point. So, yes, Conforto made a shit throw and McNeil made an error earlier in the inning. I'm okay with it. If there's anybody that's allowed to make a stink about anything in Major League Baseball, it is 1,000% Jacob DeGrom and the lack of support he gets from his teammates.
Definitely, but that situation kind of got him into trouble that inning because the next batter, Raimel Tapia, put one in the seats.
I'm going to tell you, Electric Factory, Raimel Tapia, yeah, get the most exciting player in baseball.
Shut the fuck up. But, like, that sucked. Like, that was such a gut punch in the moment. I couldn't even believe what I was watching. And it was similar to the Jazz at bat, where it wasn't even necessarily a bad pitch, but he just, like, found the barrel and it just carried. I was sitting in disbelief. I was.
Yeah, I was, out of all the guys in the lineup, Raimel Tapia to hit a home run, who had one home run last year. And I think even the year before that had like four. This is not a guy who hits home runs. He is a slap hitter, like we've mentioned. He is not
big contact guy.
Yeah, not there to do anything but literally slap it to the left side and hope he runs it out faster than the ball gets there. And for him to hit pretty well too. Like it wasn't a cheapo.
No, he's a fine baseball player. It definitely wasn't a cheapo. But again, you just felt like that at bat, DeGrom wasn't really locked in like he usually is. He's very good at understanding things he's doing wrong or things that aren't necessarily right. And correcting them, like, within that at-bat or within that inning. Ronnie actually mentioned that during the game. He said most guys, when they struggle, it takes them a start or two to figure out why. It takes DeGrom a batter or two. That's what sets him apart. That's why he's so great. The mental aspect. He's so aware of everything that's going on in the field. But for that at-bat, he just lost his focus, it seemed like. And for a while, I thought that was really going to kill the Mets. Until our own Electric Factory came up the next inning. Jonathan Villar, Captain Clutch.
Captain Clutch, indeed, I guess.
Found that corner. And Almora just scooted all the way around the bases. Great use of a pinch runner, too, by the Mets. The second, that was McCann who got the base hit, right? I was screaming, pinch runner! Pinch runner! Do it!
We were all screaming it. It was like the Mets fans the other day that I was with. And we were like, you have to run for him. It better be. I thought it was going to be VR, honestly, and Guillorme to pinch hit. Because I just thought VR is probably the fastest guy on the bench right now. But whatever he did, it worked. Way to go, Luis Rojas. I'm clapping this one up for you.
Yeah, and I got my bad tweet of the day coming out from that McCann to VR at bat, because when the bottom of the seven started, some girl on Mets Twitter, I don't even remember who it was, but she has some followers, she was like, I can't believe it, I hate Rojas, what is he doing not bringing DeGrom out for the last inning of this game, like how good he's been, the team coming back for him, and she just got the shit ratio out of her, deleted the tweet in like 10 minutes.
As she should, because
100%.
This feels like a like little boy who cried wolf scenario now with Mets fans, where it's anytime Jacob DeGrom comes out of the game, it's at stake now, apparently.
Definitely. Which, you can never take this guy out.
He's the best pitcher that I've seen in my lifetime. I'm sure he's going to be the best pitcher that most Mets fans have seen in their lifetime that are listening to this podcast. I don't imagine that there's many that are our parents' age that were able to see Tom Seaver pitch that are listening to this. If you are, thanks. But we gotta pump the brakes a little bit here. Jacob DeGrom hasn't had an issue with being pulled yet, by the way, this year. And He is definitely a guy who is not going to just give the ball up.
He also, if DeGrom did have an issue, you would never know about it because that guy is a stone. Just again, to put DeGrom's dominance in perspective so far this season and going back to last season as well. Nick Pollock had a great tweet today. Gerrit Cole in 2019 had a 16.8 swing strike rate. Swing strike rate takes every single pitch you throw and the percentage of swing strikes. Different from whiff rate, which shows the whiffs on swings. So Gerrit Cole's 16.8% swing strike rate in 2019. That was the highest since that statistic was recorded in 2000. Last year, DeGrom was 21.5%, so like 5% higher, and this year so far is 23.2%. So almost one out of every four pitches that Jacob DeGrom throws is being swung through. That's literally something we have never seen before, or just not recorded.
That's a silly statistic.
Because unbelievable.
When you said 16.8 for Cole, I'm like, that's really high.
Oh, that literally the highest on record. And DeGrom is shitting on it.
DeGrom said, hold my beer. And he's here's what the best pitcher in baseball looks like, because he's just, that debate has to be over now. Like, officially, it's dead. Not dead even in the close. Water. If anybody says anybody else, you're an idiot. You're wrong. You're a moron.
You just have to watch the games.
Yeah, just watch baseball, look at numbers, understand what you're seeing, and you're seeing possibly one of the greatest pitchers of all time right now on the mound. And then the rest of that game, some decent stuff happened. The Mets woke up the bats a little late. Brandon Nimmo is still so good, and I put it in the notes. Is it crazy to say he's the best hitter on this team?
This second right now, I wouldn't say it's crazy. I think he is. If you said pick one guy to come up, you need to keep this game alive. I'm picking Brandon Nimmo 100% of the time.
Was he hitting like 450? His on-base percentage is still above 500.
Yeah, it's literally ignorant. He's the only guy in this team who's actually hitting the ball right now decently. Besides Pete, again, today he's been putting the ball in play hard. But he's the only one who's really, really locked in. And it's crazy. This team is continuing to win games when he's the only guy locked in. The Mets this season have six home runs as a team. Six home runs. A team that last year was near the top of the league in home runs has six, and they have seven wins. Who in modern baseball has more wins than home runs? The Dodgers have like 25 or like 28 or some shit. Wilson Ramos has six alone.
Yeah, Wilson Ramos has as many as the Mets.
And he didn't hit any this week. He had six last week.
Yeah, the power department's been really bad. I just feel like the extra base hit department in general hasn't been particularly strong.
Yeah, all the departments that include bats, bad. No good departments.
Besides the wins, which we're winning games.
Yeah, so, pitching. Starting pitching, man. Starting pitching. And then that, I guess, can bring us into game two last night when the starting pitching, for the first time, besides that one Peterson start, just wasn't that good. But it's Joey Lucchese, who just isn't that good. So, I don't know. What are you doing here?
Yeah, we talked about it a little bit. It felt like a punt game for the Mets. Like,
huge punt game.
Whatever happens, happens. This isn't going to be a game that we're going balls to the wall, trying to scrap out a win. If we win, we win. If we lose, we lose. And as shitty of an attitude as that is, if there was ever a game to have that kind of attitude, it was game two of the doubleheader where it was, what, like 15 degrees at night?
Yeah, it was in the 20s. It was Lucchese versus the Rockies ace, Marquez. But I kind of thought that the Mets would be like high after game one, like winning in the fashion they did. That was one of the more emotional regular season Mets victories that I can recall in the last couple of seasons. Besides that crazy National Series from 2 years back, this was like the boys got up for that game. There was a real, like, palpable feeling that they had to win this game for DeGrom. They didn't want to let him down. Like, they stepped up as a team together. And like we said, McCann, VR, Almora, and then Lindor, these are the guys stepping up. Like, those are guys from every single tier of this roster. And then they just came out completely flat. I can't understand the concept of it being so cold and putting so many reserves in for that game who literally just sat around for 3 hours. Like, the temperature would have made me want to keep my players who were literally warm in the game, and the exact opposite happened.
The only thing I could possibly think about is maybe there's something with like downtime, like getting like being up and then getting down and then coming out to the cold. Like, could they have possibly been like, we're going to give a lot of our guys a break because, like, listen, maybe that one of them's got like a sore hamstring you don't know about. Some of the guys are just feeling a little beat up, long series or whatever it's going to be. That would be my only reasoning. The lineup was by far like one of the strongest lineups we threw out all year. Lucchese on the mound. He pitched okay. He was okay.
That first inning, I think there was, the Rockies knocked a couple balls, but it was also a little bit of bad luck, you know? And then he settled in. He was fine. And then it just, I don't know. It seems like the Mets went out with that game expecting Not much.
Also, like, not really fair to Lucchese that, like, his first start as a Met, he goes up against the Colorado Rockies in Colorado in 15, 20 degree weather against a team that he's faced all his career and has all the footage and film on him, and they've seen him time and time again.
They've crushed him. He had pretty bad stats going into that start in Coors, but who doesn't? Like, Coors is just, it's impossible to pitch there. That's why, again, I would have made absolutely certain my A offense was in the lineup that day, especially against Marquez. Marquez is the only pitcher on the entire Rockies roster who you should really fear in any degree. Maybe Bard. Bard threw some heat. He looked good today, but I don't know. I didn't like that at all.
And, like, he gave up, what, 3 and 2 innings, I think, which, like, in Coors,
three innings.
So, yeah, 3 runs shouldn't be anything, of course, that you can't come back from. It's not an insurmountable lead. And then Gesellman came in, first appearance of the year. So, hey, welcome to the team, Robert Gesellman. Yeah. Welcome back.
Happy to have you.
That was it. That's all there is to talk about him, because he is just a reminder that exists.
Gesellman was throwing some meatballs that the Rockies just weren't able to get around on.
And, like, I can't even blame him, because it's been 20-something days since he's made an
appearance. Oh, no, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I just figure that Gesellman, and the same thing goes for Barnes, and maybe the same thing goes for Hildenberger to a different degree, but these are the guys you bring in when you're losing by a lot or you're winning by a lot. They just, I don't know, in such a tight game in a place like Coors Field, using Barnes in that was the fifth inning. In that fifth inning, just felt wrong. I just would, especially with all the off days coming up and the layoff beforehand, I really would have looked to Castro or May to try and keep that game as a one-run deficit.
Yeah, I wonder if, it's so weird. If you think about it, Mets really haven't had a blowout or I guess the Phillies game where Barnes came in again.
Yeah, the Peterson game. But again, he made that, even when Barnes came in that game, it was attainable. I think it was a 3 or 4 run deficit at the time. And he gave up a moonshot.
Yeah. It's just like, at some point he does have to pitch. These guys do have to throw.
No, for sure. But with the amount of off days the Mets have had, workloads are not a concern yet. I get maybe you want to keep innings off of Castro and May, given their usage relative to the game's play. But relative to the days of the season, it hasn't been much.
No, it hasn't been much.
No, and I would have really tried to keep my foot on the gas pedal that game. I disagree with that call. And not even that Barnes looked that bad. There wasn't that many balls in play, but there were just a couple ground balls that found holes. And the play, here it was, the Mets shifted against Story, and a ball went right to second base. That would have been a double play inning ender. And then two batters later, Fuentes hit the ball out.
Yeah,
also,
I mean,
can we talk about how much Fuentes looks like Nolan Arenado?
Well, you know that's his cousin, right?
I know. I had no idea that was his cousin. And Gary pointed out game one. I was like, what the fuck?
You know, he's budget Nolan Arenado in that he's just simply not nearly as good of a player, but he looks exactly like him.
I think that Jeff Brithich may have just been trying to fool the Rockies fans who weren't very attentive this offseason. But, oh, look, wow, Arenado may have lost some weight. Did he also lose some height? I think he lost some power.
Slap a number 20 on him, right? Yeah. Number 20 and put Arenado on the back of the jersey. And no, I'm sure half the Rockies.
You just checked out the jersey back there?
Yeah, I was like, what number is he? I think he's 20. I still don't know. But yeah, I mean, Fuentes hit that ball. I just, like, here's the thing with Jacob Barnes, and you said it, like, these are the guys that got to come in just games that are blowouts either way. They can't pitch in close scenarios.
We've talked about the A bullpen this year, and we talked about the B bullpen this year being like Castro, May, then Familia. These guys are the C bullpen.
Yes. Although, I liked what Hildenberger had.
I did too. I was actually about to say that. He looked pretty decent. Like, I love having guys with different arm angles in the bullpen. Just keeps hitters honest.
I think, like, on the pecking order, he's got to go ahead of Barnes and Gesellman, yeah, right now. Just based off that one performance.
Not even a question of that.
Because, like, while he doesn't have particularly, like, anything special, because of his arm angle and because of just being so herky-jerky, and he really is so different than any pitcher that the Mets have. Like, he's just junk, 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 junk.
Lupus is kind of a junker. He's a little bit of a junker.
Yeah, but he's lefty, so whatever. Yeah, you're a lefty.
Yeah.
But he's just so different. I really like the idea of using him in maybe a game that's like a 4-run lead in the fifth inning, sixth inning, something definitely early.
Yeah. I would have even preferred him to come out before Barnes, like you just said. Especially, like, Hildenberger is cool because he has 3 pitches he uses kind of equally, where it's like changeup, fastball, slider. So that will keep hitters more honest, especially you're thinking about 3 pitches, equal likelihood of being used with the sidearm action. And he's a guy that there's not that much film on him, really. He's more interesting than Barnes, in my opinion, for sure. But the Mets seem to like Barnes. They jumped on him in the offseason for reasons I still cannot figure out.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense to me. Like, his stuff is, he sits like 93. Like, it's, that's like, not particular. Like, super, you look blah at the size of this guy. He's got muscles on top of his muscles, and you think he's going to come out throwing 98. he just throws like mid-90s, and his like slider or whatever that pitch is
it has some bite, but just okay. not enough.
And like, I don't even know, is he a spin rate guy? And it's just like, I don't understand the appeal of him, especially when we do have a guy like McWilliams and waiting in the wing that I would just much rather see get these innings.
Dude, same with Vizcaíno, who was throwing upper 90s in the spring, a guy who was the Braves closer not very long ago.
The only thing I could see with not bringing those guys up is we've seen how little Barnes has been used. Maybe they want these guys throwing every day. Maybe they want them, especially a guy like Vizcaíno, who's like more so rehabbing right now because he is coming off of like some major surgeries. Maybe they want those guys throwing, but you know, think about what we're talking about too. We're talking about the C team bullpen for the Mets right now in depth, which at the end of the day, hopefully we don't have to talk about them too much. Hopefully this is one of the few things that we talk about them, because if we're talking about Jacob Barnes getting significant innings at any point in the season, I have a feeling we're going to be in trouble. And right now,
I will say about Barnes though, last year he did have a K rate over 30%, where that's kind of that golden line you want to see out of a reliever who could be good. And the color this year, as bad as his fastball has been eviscerated. Batters have a 600 batting average against Jacob Barnes' fastball, and very limited sample. He's only throwing 18, so that doesn't really mean anything. It's mostly noise, but he's getting 36% whiffs on the color. There's something there, I guess, but again, there's no reason that Castro and May couldn't be used in that game. With an off day the day before, an off day on Monday, they were willing to use Edwin Diaz 2 days in a row. I can't understand why they wouldn't have used one of those two to keep that game at one run. Especially against, yeah, they were getting to Marquez. They had just like started to figure him out a little bit.
I think it's simply just they wanted to get these guys in. It had been 10 days for Barnes. It had been 20 plus days for Gesamen. And Hildenberg made his appearance, even though we liked his appearance. I simply think that Rojas wanted to get these guys some innings because they just simply haven't been able to throw. And hey, you never know when you're going to need to get these guys up. And I would rather, again, have them get shelled in this game and have their 10-day break than, okay, well, it's a 10-day break. The Mets are up 5 and Barnes gives up 5 and now it's a tie game.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, no, I feel you there. But just, I wanted a sweep. I really wanted a sweep. I might be being greedy, but
I mean, we talked about it, like a sweep would be huge here, looking like at the end of the year for the standings, because you get 3 against the Rockies, who are going to be a bottom feeder in this division. If you can get 3 there, that basically puts pressure on every other team in the National League East. You now have to sweep the Rockies in order to gain, to stay even with the Mets when you face them. You have to sweep them to stay even. Now, a game or two here or there, it changes some things.
It does, yeah. Especially, again, I'm bringing it up again because it still vexes me. The Mets have 3 off days in the next 2 weeks. They've played less games than every team in baseball this season. These guys can work. You gotta let them work.
I'm a peacock. You gotta let me fly, you know? Gotta let the boys fly. But, and then after the lead, we saw the Mets kind of just, I don't want to even say, they were didn't care, oh, but the at-bats
completely,
were just
completely rolled over.
Yeah, the Mets were like, all right, it's cold, let's get over with.
Marquez just patted their belly. And again, they were probably fucking cold. It got cold there. You could see Pete, like, blowing into his hand at first base, floor of the boy, cold-blooded. You wrote in the notes, Mets simply didn't want to be there. I felt that. It was seemed true.
I can't blame them. I mean, having played in 15-degree weather myself as a youngin' and not in Colorado, where it's also a mile high, pretty miserable. And I wasn't facing anybody throwing 95 miles an hour with movement. I can't imagine, like, taking one off the hands here. That would suck.
There was a clip yesterday in the 6th or 7th inning. I don't remember who was hitting, but it was a lefty. So they were like doing where they zoom in on the left-handed batter box and right-handed side. So you can see the fans sitting above the dugout. And there was a clear shot of just a middle-aged woman yawning. And that was all of us last night in the 6th and 7th innings. So I was like, let's just end this game, I guess.
But, I mean, overall, from the series, 2 wins. Good, we won the series. You go 2-1 in every series you play, you're a playoff team. So that's
playoff team, you're one of the best teams of all time. You go 2-1 in every series, if you win the season with a 666 winning percentage, you are an all-time great baseball team.
Are you like 108-54 or something like that, I think?
Yeah, that's pretty, 108-54. Pushing, that was actually crazy mental math. You'd be pushing the 2001 Mariners, or 2000 Mariners, for one of the best regular season records ever. But again, while we're talking about the cold, great time transition to the Mets' next 3 games, which will also be played in the cold. So I hope everyone liked it, because we got 3 more coming.
Yeah, Chicago Cubs, which they're playing right now, and the Cubs are just bad. The Cubs are another really bad team that we
Cubs
have to meet up on.
The Cubs
that
are
pitching
bad.
Is atrocious, and the horrible offense is even worse somehow.
Yeah, but the Cubs season averages look better after they put up with like 14 runs on Saturday.
Yeah, well, the Braves bullpen, which apparently isn't a big problem according to Braves fans. But
no,
haha,
not a big problem at all. Yeah, they only have like basically one good reliever, but it's not a big deal. And now they're losing starters left and right now.
Yeah, so the Cubs are not, again, similar situation to the Rockies. They have some players you have to keep an eye out for sure. They have good players on that roster. Ian Happ's really good. I like him a lot. Wilson Contreras is starting to get hot a little bit. When he gets hot, he's scary.
Ian Happ has been bad this season. His average is like his average is like under 150 right now. His on base is still hovering right at 300, which is he takes a ton of walks. That's him, but he has not put the bat in the ball. And as the rest of the Cubs, this team, I'm pretty sure going into today, they had the lowest. Going into yesterday, they had the lowest batting average in baseball.
Well, I know for a while Jacob DeGrom was hitting better than the entire Chicago Cubs team. Yeah. So.
There was a time about a week ago where every pitcher in baseball cumulatively was hitting better than the Chicago Cubs team, yeah, which is disastrous.
So rough. But like they still have Rizzo, they still have Baez, they still have Bryant.
Yeah, they have dudes. There's
Jock
guys.
Jock Peterson
there.
Stinks, but like Jock Peterson also can hit a home run any given pitch.
Yeah, he does.
His power is insane. They're the Cubs. Like they're not the same Cubs team that you feared a couple years ago. Definitely not. The bullpen's not particularly strong. The starting pitching is abysmal. And we are missing Hendricks, which is fantastic.
Yeah, even though Hendricks just got annihilated on Sunday Night Baseball. He gave up more home runs in the first inning tonight than he's given up in any individual start in his career. The Cubs' batting average going into today is .184. They have a lower batting average than the Cleveland Indians, who have been no hit.
Again, this is a series like you got to come out and you got to pulverize them. So it's Arrieta pitching for the Cubs against us on Tuesday. Then we got Davies on Wednesday and Trevor Williams on Thursday. And shockingly for you Mets fans, you've probably recognized a couple of those names. None of them are, you know, world beaters or anything like that. They are BP pitchers.
The Mets aren't going to see a fastball above 91 miles an hour from any of these starters.
I think the Cubs, I thought I saw a stat that basically the Cubs average like fastball velocity from their starters is under 90 miles an hour. Yeah.
Well, the Cubs, that's an organizational tactic that they've done this year. Apparently the Cubs don't have any money, which is untrue. They really just have a cheap owner. I think they spent too much money putting adjustments on Wrigley Field the last few years and just have lost ticket sales, but that's neither here nor there. They've kind of leaned into this anti-velocity approach because they found what seems like a market inefficiency because everyone's paying for velocity. A lot of the guys in this staff, excluding Arrieta and Williams, the guys we see, of course, have pretty good like stuff. Like they have good breaking balls, fastballs that move a lot. Davies is like that. Davies always has low ERA, and no one knows why. The same, like Alex Mills is being used in relief right now, so it looks like we're going to miss him. And Adbert Alzolay got sent to the alternate side last week, who's been so far in his career.
He's got stuff, though, yeah.
Yeah, no, those guys have stuff. Arrieta and Trevor Williams do not have stuff. No. Lack of stuff.
Yeah, there's like, again, oh man, if these bats could just wake up. If these bats could just wake up,
It's going to happen. It's not like the Mets aren't going to hit this year. There's no way that's like possible.
No, they have literally too good of a lineup. This is one of the better lineups that we've seen in our lifetime. So they're going to hit. It's just a matter of like getting back into that rhythm. Hitting's contagious, and clearly when they're not hitting, it's also contagious, which is very topical with COVID-19 still existing. But again, if we thought the Rocky series was going to be the one. If there was a series, this is the one that we need. If there's a series now, it's the Cubs one. You're not facing anybody.
It's still going to be cold. It's so hard to hit in the cold. And we've been talking a lot about how bad the Mets have been on offense. Through the season so far, they actually have the 10th highest WOBA in baseball.
How's that even possible?
I have no idea. I myself am shocked.
They walk and like, hey, well, they're not hitting home runs. I can't even use that. They have 6 home runs on the season or whatever it is.
By far the lowest in baseball.
That's so bad. That's lower than the Marlins. Imagine.
Way lower than the Marlins.
I think the outlook is, we're still feeling good as Mets fans, I think. Like, we won the series. We won the series and we didn't play particularly a team game. It was very one-sided. The pitching carried us, which is awesome to see because, again, if you had any problems that you thought were going to be with this team at the start of the year, it was on the pitching side. You thought the offense was going to be fine. So it's good to see that what we thought was going to be an issue is playing well, and we know that the offense is going to readjust as the season gets longer. They're just too talented not to. A lot of great things to take out of the series again. Fucking love Marcus Stroman. Please
love
keep
Marcus
him in
Stroman.
A Mets jersey for a while along next to Jacob DeGrom. Like, Stroman has a .90 ERA.
Yeah,
DeGrom has what?
Silly.
.45, I think I saw, or something like that?
Yeah, it's .45 or .47, something in there.
How does that
no
happen?
No idea. Stroman, he's due for some regression.
Of course.
He's only striking out 13% of the batters he's facing, by far the lowest in his career. You need to see that number go up, but I think we will. I think he's been pitching to contact more so. Summertime, gets nice and warm, humid in the air, grip that slider, get that split change going. He'll be back.
No, he's been pitching smarter, not harder, and that's been working. So I have no complaints here. Mets, we're 7-4, 1st place. The rest of the division is just not playing good baseball right now.
I feel like no one in baseball is playing good baseball. There's only like a handful of teams who are over 500, which is weird.
Like, the Phillies got to smack around the Cardinals, and the Cardinals stink, so we know that. Mets are in first place. Mets are in first place. And we got games in hand. I love having games in hand. I really do. Especially, like, over a long season, 162. If Mets can throw out some wins here and there, they're playing good baseball. The Nationals look atrocious. Strasburg went down on the IL today, which sucks, just, like, as a baseball fan. That's a
disaster, yeah.
The Braves have been losing guys left and right. They have no third baseman, Sean. They called up 36-year-old Sean Casmar to play third base, which is a cool story, but that's a problem if you're calling up a 40-year-old guy to play, you know, be your starter. Mets have an opportunity, especially against the Cubs, to really make a little bit of a dent here early in the season.
Cubs, then Nationals.
And then the Red Sox, who are luckily starting to cool off right now. So we might be catching them at the right time, too.
We got two shows before that series.
We got so many shows before that, which, I mean, kind of leads us to the end of this show here, because we have been talking about the Mets for way longer than we thought we were.
We've been rambling about nonsense for at least 10 minutes.
Yeah, and there will be plenty of stuff cut out, so you guys aren't going to hear everything, which, yeah, I'm sorry, but we do say a lot of nonsense that is not important, and we want to keep the watch time and the listen time up, which, by the way, has been incredible. So this is where we'll give you our, you know, what's it called when you do it all the time? Like, something consistently. Yeah, consistent? Our consistent thank you? I don't know what it's called, but whatever it is, we're giving you our thank you again, because the sport really has been great. The YouTube videos have been killing it. The streams, the listens have been really, really solid and really on a consistent basis. If you guys don't know, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, watch us on YouTube. Just search Mets Stuff Podcast. You'll find me on Twitter, GiraffeNeckMark, James on Twitter, Jeter Had No Range. Make sure you're following both of us if you want to see what we're talking about during games and you want to see what we're saying before the podcast comes out. And you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram for the podcast as well at Mets Up. James, another great episode. Another happy one. Another happy one for sure. Is no longer
happy.
Doom and gloom. We were never doom and gloom, let's not say that. Come but on. No more of this. No more of the hand on the head.
No more questioning our existence.
Yes, we're seeing real baseball. We're getting into a consistent season, and the Mets are in first place. Can't ever complain about that.
Absolutely not.
All right. Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching, everybody. It's episode 7 of the Messed Up Podcast. We'll see you a little later this week after the Cubs series, and hopefully we're talking about some more W's in the books. Bye.